It was a riddle, not a command, by Joseph de Monde. Chapter 21. The Moon Below Her Feet. Page 91. The Feast of Trumpets, as most of us know, is on the first day of the seventh month, and the beginning of the Feast of Trumpets, or the first day of the Feast of Trumpets, is determined by the new moon. The argument is not whether or not to keep the Feast of Trumpets, but is instead which new moon we use in order to correctly determine the first day. That is to act in accordance with a conjunction new moon, the dark or invisible moon that is in line with, between the earth and the sun to where it cannot be seen, or a sighted new moon crescent, which reflects the first rays of the sun after it has moved out of conjunction. I don't want to allow for anything getting lost in the translation, so I'm going to quote what Mr. Martin says verbatim, starting on page 82 of his book and finishing on page 90. Here is what he has to say. The essential factor in interpreting the symbol of Revelation 12 verses 1 to 5 is the identification of the woman. What is John signifying by mentioning her? This much is certain. The woman in the first three verses is featured as being in heaven, and both the sun and the moon are in association with her. After the dragon cast down a third of the stars of heaven, Revelation 12:4, the woman is then found on earth, verses 6 and 14. But the important factor is the birth of the man-child, and the woman's relationship with the heavenly signs, while she is symbolically in heaven. The first three verses of Revelation 12 shows the sun clothing her, and the moon under her feet, and the 12 stars on her head. The birth of the Messiah is associated with this heavenly spectacle. Since some noted heavenly bodies are a part of the picture, it could well be that John intended the woman to represent a constellation, that the two primary luminaries transverse, and that she was a part of the zodiacal system which gives headship to the signs. The 12 stars were a crown upon her head. Recall that interpreting astronomical signs dominated the thinking of most people in the first century, whether the people were Jews or Gentiles. Indeed, the word sign used by the author of the Book of Revelation to describe this celestial display was the same one used by the ancients to denote zodiacal constellations. Liddell and Scott, Lexicon, 1448. This is made clearer when one looks closely at the text. Since the sun and moon are amidst or in line with the body of this woman, she could be in a symbolic way a constellation located within the normal paths of the sun and moon. The only sign of a woman which exists along the ecliptic, the track of the sun in its journey through the stars, is that of Virgo, the Virgin. She occupies in bodily form a space of about 50 degrees along the ecliptic. The head of the woman actually bridges some 10 degrees into the previous sign of Leo, and her feet overlap about 10 degrees into the following sign of Libra, the scales. In the period of Jesus' birth, the sun entered in its annual course through the heavens into the head position of the woman about August 13th, and exited from her feet about October the 2nd. But the Apostle John saw the scene when the sun was clothing or adorning the woman. This surely indicates that the position of the sun in the vision was located somewhere mid-body to the woman, between the neck and the knees. The sun could hardly be said to clothe her if it was situated in her face or near her feet. The only time in the year that the sun could be in a position to clothe the celestial woman, called Virgo, that is to be mid-body to her in the region where a pregnant woman carries a child, is when the sun is located between about 150 and 170 degrees along the ecliptic. This clothing of the woman by the sun occurs for a 20-day period each year. This 20-degree spread could indicate the general time when Jesus was born. In 3 BC, the sun would have entered this celestial region about August the 27th and exited from it about September the 15th. If John in the book of Revelation is associating the birth of Jesus with the period when the sun was mid-bodied to the woman called Virgo, and this is no doubt what he means, then Jesus would have to be born within that 20-day period. From the point of view of the Magi, who were astrologers, This would have been the only logical sign under which the Jewish Messiah might have been born, especially if he were to be born of a virgin. Even today, astrologers recognize that the sign of Virgo is the one which has reference to a messianic world ruler to be born from a virgin. Devor Encyclopedia of Astrology, page 366. This heavenly woman called Virgo is normally depicted as a virgin holding in her right hand a green branch and in her left hand a sprig of grain. In the Hebrew zodiac, she at first, in the time of David, denoted Ruth, who was gleaning in the fields of Boaz. She then later became the virgin when the prophecy of Isaiah 7:14 was given in the time of King Hezekiah and the prophet Isaiah. This virgin held in her left hand a sprig of grain. This was precisely where the bright star called Spica is found. Indeed, the chief star of the constellation Virgo is Spica. Bullinger, in his book The Witness of the Star, on pages 29 to 34, said that the word Spica has, through the Arabic, the meaning the branch, and that it symbolically refers to Jesus, who was prophetically called the branch in Zechariah 3:8 and 6:12. And Bullinger and Seiss, in his book The Gospel of the Stars, maintain that this sign of Virgo designates the heavenly witness for the birth of the Messiah, Jesus. They say that Virgo should actually begin the zodiacal signs that give the story of the Messiah. This may be. The Apostle John may have given the same indication as far as the first full sign of the zodiac is concerned. He depicted the woman of Revelation as having a crown of 12 stars on her head. This could well show that the woman Virgo is the constellation of headship for all the 12 signs. The head position of Virgo is actually located within the last 10 degrees of Leo. It was in this very region where the story of the career of the Messiah would begin that Bullinger and Seiss were referring to. Thus, the story of Jesus and his mission on earth, as related by these heavenly symbols, should logically begin with his birth from a virgin and conclude with him being crowned king in the final sign of Leo the Lion, with its chief star being Regulus the King Star. This is no doubt what the Apostle John was trying to show through the symbols found in Revelation 12. The birth of this child in Revelation 12, whom John identified with Jesus, should have occurred while the sun was clothing the woman, when the sun was mid-bodied to Virgo. This period of time in 3 BC covered 20 days, from August the 27th to September the 15th. If Jesus were born within that 20-day period, it would fit most remarkably with the testimony of Luke relative to the birth of John the Baptist and the eighth course of Abijah. Indeed, there are chronological indications associated with this priestly course of Abijah place Jesus' birth exactly within this period. But there is a way to arrive at a much closer time for Jesus' birth than a simple 20-day period. The position of the moon in John's vision actually pinpoints the nativity to within a day, to within a period of an hour and a half, within 90 minutes on that day. This may appear an absurd assessment on the surface, but it is quite possible. Bold and underline emphasis mine. The key is the moon. The apostle said it was located under her feet. What does the word under signify in this case? Does it mean the woman of the vision was standing on the moon when John observed it, or does it mean her feet were positioned slightly above the moon? John does not tell us. This, however, is not of major consequence in using the location of the moon to answer our question, because it would only involve the difference of a degree or two. The moon travels about 12 degrees a day in its course through the heavens. This motion of 1 or 2 degrees by the moon represents on Earth only a period of 2 to 4 hours. This difference is no problem in determining the time of Jesus' birth. What is vital, however, is that this shows the moon as a new moon. Emphasis mine, bold, and underline. Now, note this point. Since the feet of Virgo, the Virgin, represent the last 7 degrees of the constellation, in the time of Jesus this would have been between about 180 and 187 degrees along the ecliptic. The moon has to be positioned somewhere under that 7-degree arc to satisfy the description of Revelation 12. But the moon also has to be in exact location when the sun is mid-body to Virgo. In the year 3 BC, these two factors came to precise agreement for about an hour and a half as observed from Palestine or Patmos in the twilight period of September the 11th. The relationship began about 6:15 p.m., sunset, and lasted until 7:45 p.m., moonset. This is the only day in the whole year that the astronomical phenomenon described in the 12th chapter of Revelation could take place. This also shows one other important point. The moon was in crescent phase. It was a new moon. It was a new moon day, the start of a new lunar month. Emphasis mine, bold and underline. While ordinary people in modern times who are not professional astronomers have little knowledge of the solar, lunar, planetary, and stellar motions, the people from the first century up to the Industrial Revolution were well accustomed to them. Even people of little education were generally knowledgeable of the main motions of the astronomical bodies, even more than most college-educated people today. When anyone of early times read Revelation 12, verses 1 to 3, an astronomical relationship was realized at once. There was no doubt that a new moon display was being shown to them. And when the woman of the sign was interpreted as Virgo the Virgin, and with the sun mid-body to the Virgin, they clearly saw a new moon day occurring sometime in late summer. The Apostle John said this a heavenly relationship occurred at the time of Jesus' birth, and in 3 BC this exact combination of celestial factors happened just after sunset, only on one day of the year. It was on September the 11th. It could not have occurred at any other time of the year. Indeed, even one day before, on September the 10th, the moon would have been located above the Virgin's feet with the crescent not visible, while one day further, September the 12th, the moon had moved too far beyond the feet of the Virgin, at least 25 diameters of the moon east of her feet. Thus only one day applies. That day was just after sunset, on September the 11th. The Apostle John is actually presenting to his readers something of significance in a symbolic way. Revelation 12 verses 1 to 3 certainly shows a new moon day that could only be observed from Earth just after sunset, and the day was September the 11th. This meter fits well with Luke's description of the birth of Jesus in Bethlehem. Recall that there were in the same country shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over the flocks by night. And the angel said, "Unto you is born this day, which began at sundown, in the city of David a Saviour, which is Christ the Lord." Luke 2 verses 8 to 11. Jesus was born in early evening, and Revelation 12 shows it was a new moon day. What new moon could this have been? The answer is most amazing. It is almost too amazing. September the 11th, 3 BC, was Tishri 1 on the Jewish calendar. To Jewish people, this would have been a very profound occasion indeed. Tishri 1 is none other than the Jewish New Year's Day, Rosh Hashanah, or as the Bible calls it, the Day of Trumpets. Leviticus 23, verses 23 to 26. It was an important annual holy day of the Jews, but not one of the three annual festivals that required all Palestinian Jews to be in Jerusalem. What a significant day for the appearance of the Messiah to arrive on earth from the Jewish point of view. And remarkably, no other day of the year could astronomically fit Revelation 12, verses 1 to 3. The Apostle John is certainly showing forth an astronomical sign which answers precisely with the Jewish New Year day. John would have surely realized the significance of this astronomical scene that he was describing. The preceding 3.5 pages were taken from pages 82 to 90 of The Star That Astonished the World by Ernest L. Martin. The computer image utilizes the Julian calendar, which counts the year zero in its calculations. 3 BC is the year 2, or minus 2, in Julian years. So this is the 11th of September, 3 BC. And the sun has just set and is mid-body of the constellation Virgo, and the moon is now becoming visible to the naked eye. When I magnify this moon above, we can see below that it is a crescent moon below her feet again. And again, This is the first day of the seventh month and the Feast of Trumpets. To clarify Gregorian years and Julian years, you need to understand that there is no year zero when using the Gregorian counting going from Common Era to Before Christ Era. But Julian years uses a year zero nonetheless. Look at the two systems below to better understand how they differ in their counting. Gregorian count, 3 AD, 2 AD, 1 AD, 1 BC, 2 BC, 3 BC. Julian count, 3 AD, 2 AD, 1 AD, 0, 1 BC, 2 BC, 3 BC. As you go back in time before the year zero, the Julian system changes the year by 1 year. That is compared to the Gregorian system in that the Julian system uses the year zero in its counting. I contacted Mr. Wadsworth, a biblical astronomer, and he confirmed the findings of Mr. Martin. In fact, many planetariums around the world have made changes to their planetary shows based on the findings of Mr. Martin. This is no small thing. Other noteworthy books on this subject that are sure to be of interest to you are as follows. The Gospel in the Stars by Joseph A. Seiss, The Witness of the Stars by E. W. Bullinger, The Glory of the Stars by E. Raymond Capt, Mazaroth by Francis Rolleston, written in 1865, a rare book. 365 Starry Nights by Chet Ramo, the works of Bob Wadsworth, biblical astronomer and researcher, with more videos and newsletters to keep you informed. But to confirm this to myself, I also installed a computer program called Dance of the Stars, recommended by and purchased from Mr. Wadsworth, and another software program called Starry Nights, which you can get at www.starrynight.com. I too was able to prove to myself the same event occurring on the same day. The moon conjunction was September the 9th. September the 10th was a 1% moon, which would have been difficult to see with the sun setting only moments before and not yet below the feet of Virgo. September the 11th was a 4% visible crescent moon and, as you can see in the picture above, the moon is below the feet of the constellation Virgo. I have now presented you with the facts concerning the birth of Messiah on the Feast of Trumpets in 3 BC. I have also presented proof of a crescent moon as described by the Apostle John. I believe we can now substantiate, with sufficient biblical evidence to boot, that a new crescent moon is what begins each month, followed by the countdown to each of the holy days as outlined in Leviticus 23. It is the crescent moon that is the variable in how the month begins. It can be seen on one of two nights. Each month is either 29 or 30 days in length as the moon circumnavigates the earth. It takes the moon 29.5 days to travel around the earth. Because there is no such thing as a half day, each month is either 29 or 30 days in length, adding or subtracting that half day each month. This is why no man can know the exact day when the crescent moon will be sighted. Will they see it on the 29th or on the 30th? No one knows for certain in advance. The exact time the moon will be sighted after the sun has set is the other variable. If the haze is not too thick and there are no clouds, then sometime between sunset and moonset the crescent moon can be seen. We just never know when or at what time exactly. And this now proves the veracity of the Hebraism spoken of in Matthew 24. But of that day and hour no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. Matthew 24, verse 36.